You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Saren Mori. Saren, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me, Brainerd.
Let's talk about the work you're doing now. It's okay. Your dog sounds great in the background.
I was just going to say my dog is barking in the background. So.
That's fine. I don't mind.
I didn't know if you could hear it.
Yeah, it's not loud at all. So,
very good.
Saren, where are you now? Are you in Brooklyn or Massachusetts? Where are you now?
I'm in Williamsburg, and
you're in Williamsburg.
My studio is a part of my home, so it's attached. There goes a dog barking in the background.
Right. That sounds like a big dog, too.
Yeah. She's a 90-pounder. She's a Ridgeback boxer.
It is big. So tell me what you're working on in your studio at the moment. I don't know if you're preparing for a show or what's happening, but what's going on in your studio?
Right now, I'm just really holed up in my studio doing a lot of different things. I tend to work on about 5 things at a time, but usually smaller things. But right now, I happen to be working on 2 large paintings, a medium-sized diptych, and also 1 small painting. And I use this material called Ultralight, which is a marshmallow fluff-like acrylic with microglass balloons in it. So, my work is super three-dimensional, and about 9 years ago now, 10 years ago, I started working with pastry bags and cake tips, so because the material itself felt like frosting. So that led me to that kind of process. And I started having a lot of fun with it. Now, I make an incredible mess, but it seems to, work out. And I color, the material comes white, and I color it with pigment dispersions. And I've got all these different tips, and actually I just started having someone make larger tips for me for these larger canvases.
By larger tips, you mean essentially kind of like larger pastry bag type tools?
Yeah.
That's cool. So let me just back up a little bit, because I want to ask you more about this material and this medium, which is so interesting. So ultralight. It's like you're saying, it's kind of like marshmallow. I mean, your work looks very sculptural, and it's good that you mentioned pastry bags, because, in some of the work, there's kind of floral motifs, and seems like something you could make with a pastry bag if you're pretty good at making things with a pastry bag. But tell me more about this material, because it seems really, really odd. You said there's air bubbles in it, and who makes this material?
So it's the base of it is a high resin acrylic that then has microglass balloons added to it. It comes from Guerra Paint, which I happen to be a partner at Guerra Paint with Art Guerra and Jody Bretnall, my husband. And so basically my husband is making most of my paint for me, which is nice. And so this particular material is super lightweight and very durable.
This is something that your husband invented, created, because this is a new medium, right?
This particular material has been around a long time. So Art Guerra was the founder of the business, and he invented this particular material, in the 80s. And it's just, I just started experimenting with it and completely love it. So it's just...
Okay, so I want to talk more about the material, but maybe I should interview your husband at another time, but I'm interested also in your both involvements in the company as a partner. Does that mean? Because that's really interesting too, and I didn't know that about you. So you're both partners, and you own an art company that produces materials?
Yeah, it's a specialty paint company. We call it more of a resource center because we do a lot of teaching to artists. So it's their paint components is the idea. So we specialize in pigment concentrates, which are called dispersions. So it's a liquid pigment concentrate, and what my husband does all day, every day, in the warehouse is takes dry pigment and grinds them into these liquid pigment concentrates that are then ready to go into any water-based medium, i.e. binder,
which we sell a lot of them, but other people like to use, you know, other mediums they've gotten used to, but they can just throw this color into anything. And some people use it in plaster for wall treatments, like all the Anthropology stores has all our color. So it's highly specialized.
And just to be clear, so those pigments are coming from stones? Your husband's grinding different stones?
No. Pigments come from large chemical manufacturers, and there are fewer of them now. There used to be a lot more of them, but like BASF is a big one. Clariant, Shepherd makes most of the cobalt in the world.
Right.
So we get these raw materials.
Those are synthesized cobalts and pigments from chemical companies, as opposed to what is also possible, grinding
mineral pigments
from stone.
The stuff that comes from rocks are mineral pigments, but those actually aren't that strong. They don't function that great as pigments, as far as being a colorant. So the pigments that are, they're called organic pigments, which are come from organic chemistry and are based from a carbon atom that are synthesized in laboratories. Those are your primary, most desirable pigments, because they have that great light fastness and weather fastness and tinting strength and all the things you want in a color.
And let me just ask, so compared to the, as you were saying, the mineral-based pigments, you're saying that there's an advantage? I mean, I know there obviously is more of it and it's easier to produce, mm-hmm. but isn't the color from mineral-based pigments also just as rich, if not richer? That was always my understanding, that you can grind those and put them in binders the same way.
Yeah, no, they don't have the tinting strength. They absolutely don't. They don't function like, a pigment that has been synthesized and made in a laboratory. There are inorganic pigments, which are the metal-based pigments, your cadmiums, your cobalt, your chromiums, titaniums. So there's a big major difference there between. So there's three main pigment classes. There's inorganic, which are those metal-based pigments, and there's organic, which are carbon-based pigments. And then you've got your earth pigments, the ones that come straight out of the ground, like from Italy. We get a lot of our earth colors straight from Italy.
Is that ochres?
Ochres, umbers, siennas, those earthy-looking colors.
So those do come from the ground that you're getting? Those aren't?
Those do. So earth colors are very beautiful, and they serve their own purposes. But again, they don't have that tinting strength.
Something like lapis lazuli doesn't have that kind of tinting strength.
No. It's not gonna give you that explosion of color. I mean, you would have to use a lot of it and concentrate it. But it's not like you're going to be able to get a beautiful saturated transparency with a lapis. Absolutely not. You'd have to go to a phthalo to get a blue that's going to be transparent and deep,
right.
or like an indanthrone, which is a synthesized indigo pigment, which is super beautiful, real deep dark blue.
But the earth colors, you're saying, the ochre, I know, I'm glad we got into this. It's a little bit of a sidetrack, but it's pretty fascinating. And of course, all the earth colors that you're talking about have their own unique richness because of where they're coming from specifically, right?
Yeah, they're basically like, especially green earth, it's like a clay. And so it actually is difficult to work with when you start trying to put it into binders, because it'll clump up on you. It's actually quite difficult to make that one into a dispersion. In fact, my husband is always like kind of freaking out when he has to do the earth colors, because they just behave badly in the mill. They want to be fixotropic, which means all thick and muddy, and they're just hard to work with. But of course, they're beautiful colors, and we all love them.
So to step back a little bit from the company and move to your art, the company and the teaching that you guys do, well, it's all mixed and it's really kind of fascinating. But so the company that you and your husband are involved in and the teaching, that's one other activity, or is that the total of your other kind of commercial activities, and then you're doing painting? Are you also teaching other places or doing other things?
I was teaching for a few years at Pratt Institute. I was teaching the light color and design course, which is basically like amped up color theory for freshman students. And then I also moved into teaching the materials and techniques course, which was a good fit because of where I was working. And let's see, one other career I have is I'm a mother, so it takes a lot of my time. I have a 9-year-old going on a 10-year-old. Yeah, and then there's the
A boy or a girl? Is that a boy or a
girl? A girl.
A girl. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, great, yeah. Well, that was what I was curious about. So, and it, you know, that's another subject. We could really talk about parenting, which I often do when I'm off the line. Because parents, you know, artist parents also, you know, have their own kind of unique things going on. Sometimes kids collaborating with their parents at really young ages and,
absolutely,
and all kinds of things. So, so I mean, you could mention that now if it's happening, but to go back to your work and and this unusual material that you're using, which now that you've also explained about pigments, it tells us a lot about how you're approaching the medium. So it's with this sculptural thing, these kind of cake bags, and you're building surfaces out. Is that what's happening right now?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm building it up. This material, you can get a super thick impasto that'll hold its shape, and it's still really flexible. Everyone thinks it's ceramic. It looks very delicate, but it's actually incredibly flexible. You could drop it on the floor, and it'll bounce, really. And it's because the base of it is this high-resin acrylic. But it doesn't look like acrylic, as I said. It's very matte, sometimes...
Can you clean it? Like what happens in terms of being archival and light fast? Can you clean these surfaces?
Well, the light fastness comes from what pigments you're using, and I make sure I always use light fast pigments. And in fact, we pretty much only offer light fast pigments. But yeah, cleaning, you know, everyone asks me that. Basically, I just use a soft brush. You know, I just you know, you just kind of brush off any dust that might collect on the surface. And as I say, it's not a fragile medium, so it's easy enough to do.
So let's talk about the imagery that you're using now. What are, in terms of what you're working on, and, you know, I love the idea, I can imagine it being like this huge mess because of these bags and how you're using it, but what's the, what kind of imagery or abstractions are you working on at the moment? Because some of them seem, you know, very, very clear in terms of them being figurative or, you know, in terms of it looking like it's flowers or animal-like things.
I'm basically just inspired by science and nature and the underlying structure of things and the idea that everything is made up of the same particulate matter, so therefore anything is interchangeable. So I'm working with a lot of ideas of things morphing into other things and hybridization, biological, botanical hybrid kind of things. I'm really interested in patterns that repeat themselves in nature and how there are really just a select few patterns out there that keep repeating themselves. And one of the main ones would be like a branching pattern, veining networks. I'm super interested in how the veins and leaves and are so similar to the veins within our body, and they all do that branching thing. So there's a lot of that kind of meshing going on. Usually the work is still relatively abstract. I'm loosely doing a lot of floral shapes. I like the rose shape because it does that spiraling thing, which is another pattern that repeats itself in nature. You know, you can think about the spiraling of galaxies, atoms,
right,
you know,
shells, everywhere.
Everything. Yeah, from micro to macro, everything spiraling and moving all the time, which is also, so there's a lot of movement in my paintings also. I'm just really trying to capture that energy and stuff that's always going on, even when we're not noticing any of it. There's always this movement, you know, within the body, within space, you know, the earth is spinning, the atoms are spinning, the earth is spinning, the galaxies are spinning, blah, blah, blah. So my most recent painting I'm working on has gotten to be a little bit more representational in a way, in that for the first time I used this material to actually make molds from. I had some rhubarb leaves growing in my garden, which were these massive leaves, and I tried putting the material actually on the leaves and lifting it. So now I've got these big leaf molds. So I'm trying to incorporate those, which is a little bit weird because I've always really gone with more abstract shapes that are kind of loosely based from natural forms, but still trying to keep it relatively abstract. So now trying to, you know, merge these two things together, it's difficult. Now, it's also got a lot of color in it, which is its own struggle. I have a lot of trouble thinking in color is really exhausting, and trying to figure out, okay, what's going to work, what doesn't work. No, that's bad. Let's get rid of that. Go back in. And also
right.
there's a whole – go ahead.
No, go on. Also, there's a whole what?
Oh, there's a whole fantastical element that I'm working with, which brings me back to my daughter, because once I had my daughter, I started getting into this more fairy tale kind of thinking, magical thinking.
Right.
And that started entering into the paintings, as well as more color. Previous to that, when I first started working this with this ultralight material, and in fact, in preparing for this interview, I went back and looked at some older work, and I just posted one of my first adventures with this ultralight material. And I was using more always flesh-like tones, and that painting was called, that I just posted, is called Flesh and Bone. Also doing a lot of sewing, which has to do with sort of emotional healing. So, yeah, that's previous work. I'll probably revisit some of that. But anyway, back to what I'm doing now. Now I've got, like, these weird snakes happening and iridescent spots and little spikes.
So snakes and spots. I mean, what I'm so curious about is also these are, you refer to these as paintings, right? And and I don't
they're
know
sculptural
if you're,
paintings.
They're very much. I mean, they're reliefs. They're sculptures, right? It's the kind of thing where it's not that you have to see a brushstroke, but you know, we don't see a brushstroke in it, right? We see it looks like everything
not
is made
so
with your hand, or like it's it really feels like a. You know, completely sculptural. You're building forms. Forms are intertwining with each other. It has so much
dimension.
Yes,
intertwining. Yes, I love the intertwining.
Yeah.
I'm trying to create that sort of, you know, simulation of multiple layers and veins intertwining with each other in the body. And, there is painting, though. I've gotten into doing painted detail on top. So some of the... I'm coloring the material as I go and extruding it, but then I'll go in and do painted detail. So like the spots that I'm referencing, those are all painted dots.
Because the sculptural material, the ultralight itself isn't colored. Are you coloring
the
ultralight?
No, it's white. It's white, and I color it with these pigment concentrates that are called dispersions.
But you put that in the bag with it, right? So it comes out colored.
No, I mix it in a container, in a separate container first. Mix the color into it. Then put that into the bag and extrude it.
That's so interesting. Okay, so then you build up these surfaces, and then you go back with your hands and move them around.
Painted detail. I'll do like, you know, a lot of the paintings have like little stripes, or actually I've been doing zebra stripes lately. Little dots, different kinds of patterns. I hand painted this snake pattern on this recent triptych I did, which is very labor intensive, but I like how it came out. There is a lot, and that's really labor intensive, that additional layer of painting that happens after everything has been put down, all the different forms that are coming out of the cake tips, and then going back and doing that additional step
I like the idea of bringing the fantastic, and as you were saying, like kind of the world of fairies in there, you know, because that is the way not only kids influence, I have a kid too, but also like all the movies you end up watching with them, right? Like, it's the books you're reading, but also that whole world, which you know, for
and
me,
I
didn't realize that would happen until I had a kid, but that you're watching it with them and suddenly you realize, wow, this is a really cool movie, you know, and you would never watch
absolutely.
It otherwise, you know.
There's a whole escapist thing that I, you know, ideally you can get to that place when you're making artwork, and that embodies the escapist ideas, that whole fairy tale, sci-fi, I love sci-fi, you know, all of that, throw that all in there, you know.
Right. Right, that's true. It's wonderfully, I like that term, you know, escapist, because I suppose that is what both of those things do, fairy tales and sci-fi. There's one way they're morality tales for kids or candy, but they're also escapist. Yeah, it's a wonderful world.
Well, there's that, too. There's this whole, you know, there's a certain dark, so I love to sort of walk that line between light and dark, and, you know, I don't want these paintings to be overly, sometimes they are quite playful, but I always want there to be that element of bites and teeth and, you know, that darkness, which is always present. You know, this is just an inherent dichotomy in life of light and dark, yin and yang, you know, beauty, ugly, you know. And so I like to you know, operate somewhere on that midpoint and have both be present.
Sharon, it's great talking with you today. I want to ask you what you're reading at the moment, the last question.
Oh, well, let's see. I recently revisited 1984 and Brave New World, just, you know, kind of just trying to feel my way through what's been going on in the world. And then I also read Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, because, again, that's sort of like patterning, but more sociological patterning. So, yeah, I'm just super interested in all kinds of patterns. And then to keep myself happy, I've been reading this book, The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, which is really fantastic. And every now and again, I go back to the Tao Te Ching and just pick that up by Lao Tzu. And then I recently picked up a book, which I haven't had a chance to get to yet, called The Overstory, written by Richard Powers, which apparently goes into sort of the life of trees. And it has like five different sub-stories within it, people impacted by trees. So it sounds, I read a great review about it. It sounds really cool and up my alley. So hopefully I'll get to that. I don't get a lot of time to read, but I chip away when I can.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Brainerd. It's been great.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.